Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Over the weekend, a Florida jury decided it was self-defense for George Zimmerman to follow 17-year-old Trayvon Martin and then shoot the teen to death. So what does self-defense mean for you? If you were being stalked by a stranger, how would you react? Zimmerman admits to killing Martin, repeatedly referring to the teenager as the suspect in his police report. But why did Zimmerman kill Martin? Why did he profile the teen in the first place? Are our laws flawed, or is our thinking also the problem? When you see a young black man, do you see danger? If you are a young black man, are you safe walking home? We're opening the lines to find out what your response to the Zimmerman verdict was. How do you explain it to your kids? And where do we go from here? Is there a way to take this tragic death and create a constructive national conversation that might change our thinking about race and justice in America? 50 years after the March on Washington, what progress are we making at changing deep underlying racial prejudice and stereotypes? Well, we'll open the lines in just a moment, but to talk about all of this, we're joined by Oren Sellstrom, who's the legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights based in San Francisco. During his tenure at the Lawyers Committee, Oren has litigated numerous federal and state court cases seeking to promote racial and economic justice. Hi, Oren.
Good morning, Holly.
And we're also joined by Brandon McFarland, who's an award-winning producer and arts producer for Youth Radio and its media properties, including the online music station All Day Play FM and Turnstile News. He's also the host of the Youth Radio podcast. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. Hi.
Thanks for joining us. Also on the line is David Muhammad, who's CEO of Solutions, Inc. He's also the former chief probation officer of Alameda County Probation and a former deputy commissioner of New York City's probation department. Hi, David.
Hey, Holly. How you doing?
Good. Really intrigued by the responses to this case and the national conversations that we are having. So I'm wondering, from each of you, what was your initial response to hearing this verdict of George Zimmerman not guilty? Why don't we start with you, Oren, then we'll go to Brandon and David.
Well, obviously, it was a deeply disturbing outcome. On the other hand, I think what is sad about it is in some ways it's not unpredictable that we've been here before, and that, I think, is the source of so much outrage and sadness in the community, is the feeling that here we are again, another case of a young black man being gunned down and the killer not brought to justice. And so I think you have those companion reactions going on, people outraged on the one hand, and yet the sadness that comes with the knowledge that we've been here before and that we need to find a way to move forward.
And there was even some resignation of sort of that people foretold that this might be the verdict.
Yes, exactly. That people have that sense that the justice system that puts forth these notions of equal justice for all is deeply flawed in America. And I think we need to recognize that if we are going to find a path forward, that people need to look for the underlying causes of a verdict like this and have that conversation that we're having today and that people all across the country are having in order to figure out how to fix that. We can't live in a society where this kind of outcome happens over and over again, and people are feeling devalued by the justice system that is supposed to be the bedrock of equality for all of us.
And do you think, though, that there's a big divide, I think, racially and maybe economically as well, about whether or not there is equal justice for all, how well the justice system actually works?
Yes, it's certainly the case that there's a racial divide along those lines, and that minority communities particularly feel under attack by the justice system in many senses. And yet it's also the case that I think when you talk heart to heart with many people of all races across the country, that people do have a deep understanding that race continues to be a factor in American life generally and in the justice system. So I think there is that common core of understanding that common notion that we do need to be seeking equal justice for all, that we're not there yet. And yet, in many ways, people, I think, don't want to talk about that always, don't want to have that conversation. We saw that in this case with the prosecution very studiously avoiding any conversation of what to many of us was very central to this case, which is the racial profiling that instigated it in the first place.
And we'll talk more about that in just a minute, Oren, because the judge actually barred attorneys from using the words racial profiling during this trial. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Let me go to Brandon and get a little bit of information about what was your initial reaction to this verdict.
Well, initially when the verdict went down, it was over the weekend, but being one of the producers here at Youth Radio, we instantly got into kind of reporting mode. So it took a while for my feelings to kind of set in, but, you know, my responses really come from, you know, the reflections of just listening to all the people that we interviewed, majority, you know, black men, young and old. And there's that eerie familiarity of kind of like, you know, we've seen this before. We felt this before, you know, we felt the same frustrations. And you know, figuring out like what to do next with those feelings.
Does it feel like this is a little different in the sense of we are all asking, where do we go next? Is there a way to take this tragedy and actually move forward so that maybe this will not happen again or so often?
Yeah. We produced something for NPR that basically it was perspective of a young teenager's kind of feelings around that, like how do we step into the leadership positions of the people from the civil rights movement, or how do we channel these frustrations into positive solutions to change things in the future?
And Brandon, let's hear a little bit of that report of the tape that you gathered. I believe this is Pendarvis Harshaw, who's 26, and Miles Bess, who's 18, speaking to each other. Let's hear a little bit of that now.
Understanding this and having the energy to do something, but not having the actual vision or directions to do so, there's a potential for mass creation or destruction.
Yeah, that's
and
what it feels like.
That's scary.
That's what it feels like. It feels like I'm either going to destroy something or I'm going to help build something great. And I feel like I'm surrounded by people that have that same feeling of just loss. And it's just we're all in the same age group, just leading each other, but we're all blind.
So that was a piece from Youth Radio. That was Pendarvis Harshaw and Miles Bess, both the young men, talking about what do we do about this? Where do we go? There's this sense of kind of blind rage and wanting to lash out, and we've seen some of that here in Oakland. In fact, Youth Radio's windows were broken the other day. And this hope that there can actually be creation and movement around this. Let's bring David Muhammad into the discussion. David, you're listening to this. I imagine you're having lots of discussions with peers, with your kids. What was your initial reaction, and what are the conversations you're having now like?
Well, of course, the initial reaction was frustration and anger and disappointment. You know, and it was over the weekend. I was talking to my children, and the verdict came in. And my son, who just saw my initial extreme anger, you know, turned and said to me, "Dad, why did Zimmerman kill Trayvon?" And I really kind of paused and thought through all the things I heard over the trial and all the things I'd read. What came to me was he's a racist. That was the only thing that could explain the profiling, the tracking down, the shooting and killing of an unarmed young black man. And it was difficult. You know, a lot of questions for my children. And obviously, I got a lot of social media and email and other communication of the anger from across the country and really across the world. And I do think that it is time to, one, discuss how can justice still prevail, and there's still questions of a federal indictment around civil rights violations. There's still the question of ending these stand your ground laws, and then there is the much deeper question of what is the value of black life in America? What is the value of a young African-American male? And I think that is the real core issue, because I think there's no question if George Zimmerman had killed a white teenager, he would be in prison right now.
So piggybacking on that, there Howard University students, young men who are in law school, who are studying to be the next generation of teachers and social workers and lawyers, put out a video where they're all wearing hoodies and asking, do I look suspicious, and really challenging that what seems to be a deep-seated notion about young black men as dangerous in this society. And I think Michael Denzel Smith in The Nation wrote, Trayvon's lifeless body was put on trial for having the audacity to exist and be black. Let me get each of you to weigh in on that question of just being a young black man in America, and particularly wearing a hoodie and maybe baggy pants. Does that place you in danger? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one, you know, Howard's my alma mater, so I'm happy for my, fellow Bison and Howardites. But, this is the core issue, this issue of can you be young black in America and just automatically be considered a thug, be considered a threat, be feared? The president of the United States said if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon. And yesterday, I think the attorney general of the United States made an incredible speech about the times he has been racially profiled, how very much he understood that race was a part of this case, and how he had to have that talk with his son. And that is what's happening with black parents around the country, of having to have that talk about how do you respond to police, how do you respond to authorities, how do you dress, how do you talk. And it's unfortunate that in 2013, even when we have a black man as the president of the United States, there's still a huge devaluing of black life, particularly young black males, being seen as criminals and thugs. And that is the real issue that has come out in this trial.
Well, and I wanted to go back to Oren and get a little bit more background on the case. We mentioned that in a lot of the writing about this, this trial was about George Zimmerman and about whether or not he was guilty of murder. But a lot of people are saying it was really Trayvon Martin who was put on trial here. Can you just give us a little bit of the legal aspect of this case, Oren, and how that worked, and why the Stand Your Ground laws really put Zimmerman at an advantage in this case?
Well, in many ways, I think it was some of the failings of the prosecution in allowing the case to be framed in that way. Certainly, the legal context they were working in did not help the fact that Florida has the Stand Your Ground laws that allowed that kind of a self-defense to be put forward by Mr. Zimmerman. By the same token, I think the prosecution in some ways played into the defense's hand by not raising the issue of racial profiling to a great degree and to framing the case in that way. One of your other guests mentioned the possibility of a federal civil rights indictment coming, and that would put the issue of racial profiling squarely into the case, as it really should be. I think when you're trying to convince a jury as a lawyer, you're trying to tell a narrative that makes sense. And if you are not able to or do not put forward what is at the core of the issue, like in this case, the issue of Trayvon Martin's race, the issue that George Zimmerman had no reason to pursue Trayvon Martin but for the prejudices associated with the color of his skin, then you really are not able to tell that story in a way that is convincing. And that, I think, is the failing that happened in the state court trial that hopefully, if federal charges are brought, would not be repeated.
And why was the defense able to get the judge to throw that out, to bar anybody from talking about racial profiling?
Well, it really has to do with the way the case was framed in some ways by the prosecution, the charges that were brought, the way in which the evidence was put forward, that the defense was able to say this issue of saying racial profiling is not something that that can come up. Whether or not that was a correct ruling by the state court judge, that's something that a federal court would not allow to happen if federal charges were brought, and that issue was put squarely on the table.
That's Orrin Sellstrom. He's legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, which is based here in San Francisco. We're also joined on the line by Brandon McFarland, who's an award-winning producer for youth radio and its media outlets, All Day Play to FM and Turnstile News. We've also got David Muhammad, who's CEO of Solutions, Inc., and he's the former chief probation officer of Alameda County Probation. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. I want to get into something that I've seen play out a lot when looking at the comments in mainstream media and looking at the coverage, which is that there seems to be a big ignorance on the part of non-African Americans about the reality of Black America, particularly for young men. So I want to get each of you to weigh in on that, but let me give out our number and invite our listeners to get your reactions to the acquittal of George Zimmerman in the murder trial of Trayvon Martin. And if you disagree with what our guests are saying, we do want to hear from you. You're welcome to call in anonymously. We expect this to be a civil discussion, but we want it to be an open one. If you're somebody who feels danger when you see a young Black man on the street, tell us why and how do you get around that and where does it come from? The number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. That's another way to remain anonymous. What do you think of the slogans, "We are all Trayvon Martin," or "We are all Oscar Grant"? And what do you think about the lack of discussion about race in the Zimmerman trial? 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. We have full lines, so you can also send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Can we move into a productive, real conversation about race, the justice system, and the state of civil rights 50 years after the March on Washington? So, guys, let me get you to talk about that question of this ignorance or disconnect among non-African Americans and maybe non-Latinos about the reality of what it's like, particularly in urban America, particularly in low-income neighborhoods for young Black men. Why don't we start with you, Orrin?
I think there's absolutely that gap, and I've heard it, you know, talked about in terms of a lack of racial empathy across the lines, that there is a significant gap in perception among white Americans and minority communities about many issues across the board, but certainly the issue of the criminal justice system and profiling is high on the list. I think a lot of that comes back to the fact that we still live in very segregated communities often, and that in order to have that kind of empathy across racial lines, that the more people are living, working, going to church, going to religious organizations with each other, that kind of empathy gets created. And so in terms of a way forward, that is one key piece of what the conversation has to be. I think there are a lot of other folks, frankly, who are sort of putting their heads in the sand in some way, that people know at some level that these issues are about race and racial justice, and yet don't want to confront those issues because those are hard conversations to have. Those can be difficult, and that in that way, there are some people, I think, that bury their heads in the sand to some degree and just wish that the issues of racial injustice would go away, but don't confront them in a way that would allow us as a country to move beyond that.
And in some of the commentaries that I've read online, people are calling Martin a thug, a wannabe gangster, and almost justifying the shooting in that way. David, do you want to weigh in on this idea of gap in perception?
Yeah, again, I think this is certainly the heart of the matter. I think if you listen to the interview that the juror gave on CNN, you see why they would come to a not guilty verdict. Her connection, her lack of connection, her clear fear, distrust of the Black community, and lack of empathy for Trayvon Martin. I mean, even asked, do you have empathy or sympathy for the Trayvon Martin family? She talks about feeling bad for George Zimmerman, and clearly not seeing this as race at all involved in the case, and of course the prosecution didn't bring it up, even though they could have brought it up. They didn't have to talk about racial profiling. They didn't have to use that phrase, the judge barred, but they certainly could have talked about race playing a big part in this case. But again, the larger issue of why, if you look at media images, if you look at the fears of America around black men, that's been around for a long time and has been used to foster fear. I mean, everything from Willie Horton and to Trayvon Martin, and you begin to see the responses. One thing about social media, when you don't have to identify yourself, it allows you to be more emboldened with your statements. And when you see the very ignorant comments by people who are talking about Trayvon as a thug and as a wannabe gangster, who again was profiled, tracked down, shot and killed by George Zimmerman, and Trayvon was in his father's housing complex. He had every right to be there. He had every right to go to the store. And when you see this in context of Oscar Grant and the many, many, many young black men who have been shot and killed either by police or by wannabe cops like George Zimmerman, you see that we have a huge problem in this country. And I do. It is fueled by media. It's fueled by a long history of unjust sentencing in prisons. It's fueled by a lot that has turned this society that's able to elect a black president still has a huge issue with the fear and racism with young black men.
And let me just read a little bit more from that interview with anonymous juror B37, who said, Trayvon Martin played a huge role in his own death. When George confronted him, he could have walked away and gone home. He didn't have to do whatever he did and come back and be in a fight. Brandon, do you want to weigh in on this disconnect around the perception of this case and the reality of black America?
It's unfortunate that Trayvon's dress code was brought up in conversation at all. I mean, we interviewed 71-year-old Arnold Perkins, who was a participator in the civil rights movement, and he was part of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, in the 70s. And he said, you know, I'm 71 years old, and I, you know, older white people still, you know, an older white woman would still clutch her purse or walk the other way or walk across the street if I'm down the street. Now, he can, you know, he can't even run, let alone, you know, steal somebody's purse. So it's like, you know, this thing is still going on. And, you know, the conversation about race has, you know, has changed, you know, to these other things, you know, involving like maybe, you know, what the images are on TV or in music, what they say that black people are. But it really doesn't matter what you wear or how you look. You know, you're still, you know, your target when you go out, you know, out, and you're a target of people's fear, you know.
Do you feel that as a 27-year-old young man?
Yeah. And I mean, I wasn't too far away from, you know, I'm not too far away from my early 20s and my teenage years. I can say I dress a little bit better now, but, it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't make a difference. The young Miles, who we heard from my tape, he's 18, and, you know, his grandmother and his mother tell him every day to be safe and to go out and look and watch your back, because you never know. And
Brandon, and really, we'll talk a little bit more about that conversation and these conversations that you have with your parents and with your kids. And we'll hear that tape that you mentioned from Arnold Perkins right after a short break. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. You just heard from Brandon McFarlane. He's an award-winning producer with Youth Radio in Oakland. Oren Sellstrom is the legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. David Muhammad is CEO of Solutions, Inc. You're listening to Your Call, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Join the conversation today by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can post your comment or question on our website, yourcallradio.org. There you will also find links related to today's show at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll assess the state of Native American media, and we'll look at the digital divide. On Monday, we're going to continue this conversation with a discussion about the new movie Fruitvale Station, about the shooting of Oscar Grant at BART on New Year's Day 2009. It's playing in local theaters like Oakland's Grand Lake, and we're inviting you to go see the movie and join our discussion about it on Monday. Again, that's a continuation of today's conversation, where we're asking, what was your response to the George Zimmerman murder trial verdict? We're talking about the aftermath of the acquittal. Zimmerman was a man who identifies himself as Hispanic. He was charged with second-degree murder in the killing of the unarmed black teenager Trayvon Martin in Florida last year. The judge barred attorneys from using the words racial profiling during the trial. So what was your reaction to the verdict? We have full lines, and I'll give out the number in a minute and go to your calls, but you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We've also got a list of articles and other comments at yourcallradio.org, so you can leave resources there at that website. And before the break, you were talking, Brandon, about Arnold Perkins, who's the 71-year-old that you interviewed. He is a veteran of the civil rights movement. Let's hear now from Arnold Perkins.
Part of the lostness, one thing is, my generation talks about the lost generation. Mm-hmm. So what has happened is I knew the way and walked away and left you, okay? Or I'm lost and you followed me. Mm-hmm. You know, so we act as if the situation that our young people are in now is of their own making. Mm-hmm. It's of the making of my generation, because we came through the civil rights era. So we thought we were free through integration, and then we then set out to get minds, you know, and then I got mine and I left you behind. And that's what we're suffering from now, is we've walked away from your generation.
That's Arnold Perkins. He's a 71-year-old who comes to us from Youth Radio. We're joined by Brandon McFarland from Youth Radio, David Muhammad, CEO of Solutions, Inc., and Oren Sellstrom, who's the legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. And guys, I want to get to a lot of the calls that we have on the line. But before that, we mentioned this idea that Arnold Perkins brought up, this lost generations that we left you behind, and this conversation that all black parents have with their kids about how to be safe in the world. Can you just respond a little bit to Arnold? Go ahead, Oren, you first.
Well, I think what Arnold really points out is that with an issue that is as deep and as complex as racism in America, we really need to be vigilant constantly to seek solutions that are going to get us to the place where we want to be, that it's not enough to, you know, win court battles. It's not enough to see slow progress happening, but that it's got to be ongoing from generation to generation that happens, these conversations that need to take place. The recognition of the problem that still exists is the first step in addressing it. And that's, I think, something that piece brought out very powerfully, that has got to be an ongoing conversation if we're ever going to get to the place in America where we really want to be.
And you're listening to Your Call. We are having a conversation about race and justice in America in the wake of the Zimmerman acquittal in Florida. I'm Holly Kernan. I'm also joined by Brandon McFarland and David Muhammad. Did either of you want to weigh in on that question about this conversation?
Yeah, Holly. You know, I think that, again, this being, as I've said several times, the heart of the matter, we need to have certainly a national discussion and exposure of this issue. There's still a lot of people in middle America, in the South, and everywhere, even in California, who have this perception of the fear of young black men. And a lot of it is fostered by the media, so we need to have a discussion about media and how media portrays young black men. And we also need to figure out how we got here and how we got here in the last several decades as it pertains to very unjust sentencing laws, very unjust criminal justice policies that have put, so if you turn on any of the police shows or the prison shows that are ubiquitous these days, you see all these young black men locked up who are being arrested, and it continues to push the false notion that most young black people are thugs. There is also an issue that when I talk to my son, it's unfortunate that I need to make sure that he goes above and beyond. If he's ever stopped by any security or any police, that the way he dresses, the way he talks is proper, and that he is respectful. And now I want him to do that anyway, but it's unfortunate that I have to, for his safety, have to make sure that the way he dresses and the way he talks is a certain way, so that he's not put in a situation where he could be harmed. And even with all of that, Trayvon was just walking home from the store. He wasn't out of place. He wasn't looking. He had a hoodie on because it was raining, right? And so all this discussion of can we wear hoodies, I mean, so we have to have this national discussion. We have to point out the horrible portrayal of black men in the media, and we have to have this discussion around the racism, the deep embedded racism, but we also have to talk about the unjust criminal justice policies and sentencing in America.
Brandon?
I would also like to point out that Arnold Perkins is also a mentor to young black leaders in Oakland, California, and that's the type of thing that's going to bridge the gap or close the divide between the generation of the civil rights movement and the generation today. And the young people are looking for that guidance. They're yearning for that leadership.
That's Brandon McFarland, who's an award-winning producer. I'll get to you in just a second,
David. I would just be remiss if I didn't say Arnold Perkins has been my mentor for 15 years, so it was great to hear him interview.
And you yourself ran the Mentoring Center and have been a mentor to a lot of other young men. Let's go to our callers, because we have so many. Keith in Santa Clara, welcome to your call. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, thank you. So I just wanted a quick comment. My name is Keith. I'm a 24-year-old. I'm white. I live in Santa Clara. I'm an American history major from the University of California. And when I heard about what happened in the case, I was disappointed. I was upset. But I didn't want to talk about it with people. I was, you know, I felt like it was obvious why it was wrong. And I didn't feel like it was something for me to get involved in arguing with people. I'm constantly told that I'm over-opinionated, but in the past couple of days, seeing how many people who are white don't understand the issues of race with what's happening, it's forcing me to be vocal and tell other people that I think what they're saying is wrong and ignorant, and that that there needs to be more understanding.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Keith. I'm going to go to Mo in San Francisco. Hi, Mo. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I live in San Francisco. My son just recently was involved in police shooting, and he wasn't.
Mo, can you speak up? You said that your son. Go ahead again.
He was shot by officers. And he was in a stolen vehicle, and he wasn't doing the right thing. But I feel like that they overreacted. And I also feel like we are Oscar Grants, all of us, black or white. The fact is, any one of us can be hurt by a Zimmerman or Miserly. We can be mistaken for being a black person. Anything can happen, but when there's people out there that are in position to uphold what is just, and they don't do that, that puts the rest of us in a state of fear. And opposite love is fear, not hate. When you're afraid, you can't love.
And Mo,
I'm sorry, I feel like the fact that we have not been apologized to, we haven't been restituted, no reparations for slavery, I feel like when you offend someone as a child and you're told you're tied on the playground, you apologize to someone when you hurt someone. you give them that closure, you give them that respect for how they react and how you hurt them. And when you don't give someone that in any kind of relationship, how can you go on?
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Mo, and we're very sorry to hear about your son, but really appreciate your perspective. And one of the things that Mo said was that people who haven't experienced racism don't understand it. Let's go to more callers. We've got Antonio in San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm somewhere there. Listen, this is just a one-sided panel, and actually I'm going to speak, but I'm not going to speak to the panel because this panel doesn't reflect the majority of the people of this country. Trayvon Martin was not killed because he was black. He was killed for assaulting a neighborhood watchman. I lived 16 years in the flatlands of Oakland, and in those 16 years, about 3,000 people got killed, mostly by blacks. And the media doesn't dedicate not even a 1% of the time to those killings. I dedicate to one black person who is killed by a white person.
Okay, Antonio, hold on. Stay on the line with us. Let's get a response first to this idea that Trayvon Martin was killed by George Zimmerman because he got into a fight with him. He assaulted a neighborhood watchman is what Antonio said. And I think that from everything I've been reading and seeing on the news, this is a very common perception. So let's see if we can engage Antonio in something productive here. Why don't we start with you, Oren?
Well, with all due respect to the caller, I think that is at the heart of what racial profiling is about, and why that is what this case is about, is that that kind of mindset is what was in George Zimmerman's mind as well, in terms of associating something that he knew or thought he knew about criminal activity in his neighborhood, seeing a black man that he didn't know, Trayvon Martin, and immediately making that association that this person is, one of those punks that's going to get away with this again. And that is the core of the problem, that issue of just because of the color of his skin being associated with criminal activity. And that is really the instigating force behind what the sequence of events that then unfolded in this case. And so it is that core issue of taking this broad perception and profiling individuals when it turned out that this was an unarmed 17-year-old who had nothing but a bag of Skittles in his possession. That is the core of the issue here. And I think that just goes to show that kind of leap in logic can lead to deadly consequences when you've got a situation of a wannabe cop that's armed and fully loaded.
And Antonio brought up another thing that I'd like to hear David and Brandon weigh in on as well, which is that we have a public health epidemic of violence and murder in some of the neighborhoods here in the Bay Area, where it is a lot of young black men killing other young black men, and it doesn't get the media attention that it deserves, in my opinion.
Yeah, so let me just address both real quick. I mean, the first part is, Zimmerman was not working as a neighborhood watchman that night. He profiled Trayvon Martin. His training as neighborhood watchman said don't follow. The 911 operator instructed him not to follow. He ignored the training and the instruction. He stalked Trayvon Martin. He confronted him, even as the juror admitted that he confronted Trayvon Martin, and then shot and killed him. And to say now that Trayvon assaulted a neighborhood watchman is absurd, ridiculous, and goes to the heart kind of the problems that we have in this country. Now, the second half of the
Hold on one second, David, but that is why he was acquitted, because the jury had that exact same perception.
Right. Well, I think he was acquitted because the jury said they started their decision-making at the point of them in or after Zimmerman having confronted him, and then they believed that there was a fight, at which point Zimmerman was genuinely fearful for his life. That part I question significantly as well. But for them to not even take into consideration the profiling, the stalking, and the shooting and killing of an unarmed teenager was insane.
it was absurd and very unjust. And hopefully the federal government could step in and talk about the violation of civil rights, which is unfortunate that the murder wasn't taken into account accurately.
And then, David, when I cut you off, you were going to address the second question, which is this epidemic of violence.
Absolutely. And I agree with the second half of the caller statement that we should be just as outraged, if not more outraged, about the daily carnage of young black men being killed in cities across the country with guns. And that is an epidemic that must be addressed. And all we get from the media now is simply that someone was shot and some black man was arrested. And that's part of the hysteria that has led to a George Zimmerman being able to kill at will young black men. But the greater issue is the proliferation of drugs, of alcohol, the poor schools in our community, the easy access to guns. And when you add that type of the concentrated poverty, when you add those elements together, you get a very destructive outcome. And that the epidemic of homicides in the black community is real, and we must be just as outraged as black people about the killings of our children in the inner cities by other black men as we are by the Zimmerman trial.
And that's David Muhammad. He's CEO of Solutions, Inc. We're also joined by Brandon McFarland from Youth Radio and Oren Selstrom from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Gentlemen, we have a lot of callers on the line that I'd like to get to, but if anybody, Brandon, it sounds like you're chomping at the bit. Go ahead.
I'm so itching because, I mean, I'm from, you know, he talks about the flatlands of Oakland. I'm from Oakland. My friends live in Oakland. So the same fears that he has, I too have when I walk down the street, you know? It's not just, you know, white people who have authority that I'm afraid of. It's also sometimes my own people. And, you know, these are bigger issues that need to be discussed. But for that same reason, should I be profiled for walking down the streets that I live in? You know what I mean? And so that was the unfortunate. I hope the caller is listening. You know, I'm from those neighborhoods too.
Thanks for that, Brandon. I've got an email from Leslie in Berkeley. I've heard and read that George Zimmerman, previous to his call about Trayvon Martin, made 46 calls to report, quote, suspicious persons. All 46 persons were black, she writes. Was this mentioned during the trial? She wants to know, and she says, racism entered every aspect of this tragic killing. If Trayvon Martin had been white, Zimmerman would, from his record, not have followed him. And she says, murdered him. Oren, do you know, was that mentioned during the trial, and is it true?
I don't know the degree to which that came out or not. It certainly did not feature prominently in the prosecution's case, and it's something that those of us who are calling on the Department of Justice to look into this matter further, one of many things that could be looked into further, because that is exactly the kind of issue that goes to whether or not what was in George Zimmerman's mind when he saw Trayvon Martin was this association with equating black individuals with crime, and that was the key to his deciding then to stalk and ultimately kill Trayvon Martin, despite the fact that police dispatchers were telling him not to do so.
And I want to get to more callers. I also want to remind people that we're going to continue this conversation on Monday when we're going to discuss the movie Fruitvale Station, which is about the shooting of Oscar Grant. It's in local theaters now, like Oakland's Grand Lake Theater, and we're inviting you to go see that movie and continue this conversation with us on Monday. Let's go to Cheo in Oakland. Hi, Cheo. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having this show, and it's really, really a vital topic. I know some of the folks you have on, Brandon and David Muhammad. How are y'all doing? So my statement is really about the media depictions, and some of you have spoken to this already, but I'm executive producer of a national film fellowship project for black men and boys called the Game Changers Project, and the whole idea is to kind of really use folks who are activists and storytellers to go out on the front lines and to see this new kind of build, a new infrastructure, a new model for representing black men and boys. Because I know that what happens in the media is, you see this even online, there's this kind of feeding of the negative stereotype. So if you even go on to Google and you Google young black men, you're going to see images that are less intelligent, more angry, more negative, images that feed into this perception. And it actually kicks up an algorithm that just kind of continues to fan these flames of fear of what black men and boys men and boys of color, kind of what they represent. And then these fears rarely ever get unpacked. We rarely actually look at the complexities. We rarely see, the contradictions. And so we're just really focused on this solution, which is that we need to put cameras and pens and any other kind of media making tools in the hands of black and brown men who can tell their own stories and provide a new narrative of resiliency, and so that we can really reach all across race, your class levels, and so that the humanity, which is really what the core of this issue is just the humanity of black life, can actually be seen in a different light.
Well, thank you so much for that, Cheo, and I hope that you'll join us on our conversation on Monday. Let me try and squeeze in one last caller before I get final thoughts on where we go from here from each of you. Let's go to Ashay in Oakland.
Hi, yeah, in Felton. I got a couple of things to say, so I'll try and say them fast. The gentleman who mentioned how we did not prepare for the next generation, I respectfully disagree. I came from a family in the East Coast who my mother spearheaded the integration of the schools in Englewood, New Jersey. And I was right there with her, in my first grade. and the whole thing is we did prepare, but there is a massive system here. It is very old. This is the, shooting young black men is the new lynching. It is the new, or else the alternative is mass incarceration. And I mean, we're 25% black people in this country, and we fill the jails to 68% or something like that. I may have the numbers a little bit off, but it's roughly that. And the whole thing is I feel like we've got to come together as a community. Not every woman is a woman warrior, but we all got to go out there and war sometime in our secretary jobs or whatever. I think we can get, yes, the young men are getting shot, and that's the most overt abuse. But it is not that the whole community is not getting abused, and I think we as a community would be stronger to recognize you have sisters standing right next to you. We are not just grieving mothers. We're not just girlfriends. And there are black women, strong black women, who can also stand by your side.
Thank you for that, Ashay. We're running out of time, so I'm going to ask, and I apologize for that. We really appreciate that contribution, but we're going to run out of time, and I want to get a couple of final thoughts from each of our panelists about where we go now, what are the solutions, and how do we make this a productive national conversation and local conversation. So you have each about a minute. Let's start with you, Oren, and maybe you can give us the legal aspect here.
From a legal perspective, it's our hope that the Department of Justice will now pick up the baton that was really dropped by state officials in Florida and take this and file civil rights charges against George Zimmerman. In our view, that is the best way to begin to rebuild people's faith in our justice system and to provide some measure of justice for Trayvon Martin. It won't heal the damage completely, certainly, but it will be a step in the right direction. From a broader perspective, I think the kind of conversation that we've been having today, conversations that cut across generations, that cut across racial lines, is really what is essential to closing that racial empathy gap, getting people to talk on the same page, and so that we can move towards the kind of America that we all want to be, where there truly is equal justice under law.
And Brandon and David, very quickly, each of you, solutions.
So I would say quickly, go to the NAACP's website to help push the Department of Justice to make that decision to charge George Zimmerman. Secondly, a part of that outgrowth is also to reverse these horrible Stand Your Ground laws, and NAACP and the National Action Network and others are working hard on that. And the third is to participate in the discussion. And like the caller Chael said, a good friend of mine who is, we have a way more positive, successful, productive young black men, vast more than the few who get caught up into destructive behavior because of succumbing to the environment. And so we need to push up those positive images and also help our people in the community who are seeking the help and who want the help. We have a lot to do to overcome this negative image.
And Brandon, you're going to get the last word, and you've only got 30 seconds. I'm so sorry.
The youth will lead the way. And I think that more conversations between the older generation to sort of help these young people who will be the leaders that will spark the next, you know, movement that will change things.
Well, thank you all so much. Again, we're going to continue this conversation on Monday. We're urging everybody to go see the movie Fruitvale Station and join our discussion that will continue looking at these issues. Thank you so much to Oren Selstrom, who's the legal director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights based in San Francisco. Brandon McFarland is an award-winning producer for Youth Radio. He's the host of the Youth Radio podcast and the online music station All Day Play FM and Turnstile News are also part of Youth Radio. David Muhammad is CEO of Solutions, Inc. We're going to put a link to articles and more resources for you at yourcallradio.org. And I want to thank to everybody who called and emailed, and I apologize that we couldn't get to all of you. Join us on Monday. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. What is the state of Native American media? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the role Native Americans are playing in today's media. Why do we so rarely see stories about Natives by Natives? According to the president of Native Public Media, Native Americans face a huge digital divide. But radio happens to be one medium that remains vibrant for Native communities. So what is the power of media for keeping culture alive? Join us at 10. It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.